Pastor Greg Locke is teaming up with Bethel's Sean Foyt as we look into the pastor's life and doctrine and see that he isn't saving himself or those who hear him. Stay with us as we look at these and other stories on the 5:11 News.
Now, there are two kinds of people in the world, only two kinds, not black and white, not rich and poor. There are those who are dead in sin, and there are those who are dead to sin.
After three nights of unbridled lawlessness across London, the contagion is spreading.
The problem is that God has already judged this. He has judged murder already. I don't need to question it. I don't need to ask and wonder what his plan is.
We're commanded as Christians not to participate in the works of darkness, but expose them.
Welcome back to 5:11 News. I'm your host, Chad Davidson of Good Fight Ministries. And on today's episode, we're going to be discussing a number of important topics, but specifically the likes of none other than Pastor Greg Locke. Now, a lot of people have not only followed or subscribed or liked or become friends with Pastor Greg Locke on Facebook, Instagram, and so forth, but a lot of his videos have gone viral. People have really enjoyed some of his confrontational nature when it comes to against some of these mandates and against some of the tyranny that's going on in America and so forth. But one of the things that I realized right away that when I began watching these videos that were shared a number of years ago before some of his behavior and some of his teachings have come more to light, I started to realize that he seemed like somewhat of a showman, that a lot of the theatrics, a lot of how he was speaking, just didn't come off to me as someone who was sincere in their delivery. And even though, I'll be honest, the first couple things I heard, I think, oh, that's pretty good. That's good to have some warnings on that. But I just started to realize that some of it wasn't really a biblical concern, but more of a whiny complaint. And that is something that has become more and more of a growing concern when it comes to those who are pushing a lot of the narratives that Pastor Greg Locke is pushing. Now, I do want to put that into quotations because I don't believe that Pastor Greg Locke has met the qualifications of a pastor. And I'm going to get into some of those reasons, but I wanted to put this out in the very beginning before we get into some of the, I guess, minutiae, some of the dealings and some of the ties that he has kind of made and tied up with more recently. But I was very concerned immediately when it was, you know, a lot of material was getting put out there regarding Mr. Locke because he was leaving his wife and marrying his secretary. And over again, when things were getting revealed, it seemed as though Mr. Locke was doing some covering up, whether it was the fact that Pulpit and Pen had a picture that they posted of his car outside of his secretary's house. And then the next day he announced his relationship with her and wanted to file a lawsuit, whether it was the fact that he never really said that he had biblical grounds for his wife, but made videos to cover up the fact and basically said she went crazy and so forth, but didn't really have biblical grounds, not like she didn't want to be reconciled with him, not like she didn't want to and so forth be with him, or that she had cheated on him or something. But it seemed as though that he, who, by the way, the woman Ty, who he is now married to, he actually performed the wedding of her and her husband's nuptials, and he was the pastor over it. And I mean, some of this stuff is just kind of icky and nasty, and you get right into it and you're like, wow, that's interesting. And a lot of times when we look at the smoke, we see the fire. And this seemed to me in a situation where Mr. Locke, his life was not clean and tidy, and neither was his doctrine. And looking at some of the things that he has taught, most recently being a firebrand in the news because he told people that if they came into his church or tent meeting and so forth with a mask on, he would have them escorted out because he lives by faith and not by fear. Now, I want to point this out. I'm not a big guy on wanting to wear masks whatsoever. I don't like having to wear masks, but I also don't threaten to kick the teeth out of those people who tell me I have to wear a mask when I come into their restaurant or so forth. Also, if somebody is attending your fellowship or somebody is attending to come hear the word of God and you're putting some sort of provision like if you wear a mask, you will be escorted out, I don't think that's biblical. It's fine if you say we don't make it mandatory for people to wear masks. We don't at our fellowship. But for someone to come out and to be so pugnacious in the fact that if you did say, hey, I've looked at the science and I think this keeps me protected, and then you go to the place where you say you can't even attend our fellowship, how are you any better than the pastors, quote unquote, that are making people bring their vaccination card before they will let them in? I don't really see how you think when you swing the pendulum over to here that you're doing any sort of service for the Lord. You're really not. I don't think that the Lord wants to anyone to be hindered in hearing the word of truth. Not that I think you're necessarily preaching it, because what Greg Locke has gone into in his teaching has been more about tyranny and so forth than it is about the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that are fans of Greg Locke and say, no, he does preach the gospel and that's fine, but it is mixed so much and you're going to hear it because I don't want to just simply give you all of, hey, this is what I read, this is what I listened to, this is the video I saw. You guys are going to hear his own mouth, but I also just want to read the qualifications of a pastor according to 1 Timothy chapter 3. That is a trustworthy statement. If any man aspires to the office of overseer, it is a fine work he desires to do. An overseer, then, must be above reproach. Not really above reproach with the way he's acting. The husband of one wife, leaving your wife for your secretary, not so good. Temperate, not so much. Self-controlled, not so much. Respectable, not so much. Hospitable, maybe to those who want to wear masks when they come to your congregation, not so much. Skillful in teaching, not overindulging in wine, not a bully. I don't know if he doesn't fit into that category, but gentle, not contentious, free from the love of money. He must be one who manages his own household well, keeping his children under control with all dignity. But if a man does not know how to manage his own household, how will he take care of the church of God? Doesn't seem like he's managing his household well, and not a new convert, so that he will not be conceited and fall to the condemnation incurred by the devil. And he must have a good reputation with those outside of the church so that he will not fall into disgrace and the snare of the devil. And I think that multiple things here, he is unqualified. This is why I don't consider him to be a pastor. And I'm going to play a video, and then I want to read the qualifications, as we already read in 1 Timothy. Then I'm going to read the qualifications that Paul lays out to Titus in Titus 1, 5 through 9. But I want you to hear this video. This is when someone at a Dunkin' Donuts at a business told him to wear a mask and he refused. And when someone called him a liar about something, this was his reaction.
I said, if you call me a liar one more time, I'm going to take these work boots and I'm going to kick your teeth down your throat. Yes, I said it.
For this reason, I left you in Crete that you would set an order that remains and appoint elders in every city as I direct you. Namely, if any man is a beyond reproach, the husband of one wife, having children who believe, not accused of indecent behavior or rebellion, for the overseer must be beyond reproach as God's steward, not self-willed, not quick-tempered, not overindulging in wine, not a bully, not greedy for money, but hospitable, loving what is good, self-controlled, righteous, holy, disciplined. Does that sound like someone who's not a bully? Does that sound like someone who's not quick-tempered? He just told a worker at a Dunkin' Donuts that he was going to kick their teeth in. This is not the behavior of an overseer, elder, pastor, presbyter, so forth, right? This is not the behavior that any blood-bought believer should be practicing. To tell someone you're going to kick their teeth in doesn't sound gentle. Doesn't sound hospitable. Does he realize that these people are being paid for these jobs? This is not This is one of the things that bothers me. It's fine if you hate wearing a mask. I do too. All right, I got allergies, my nose itches, I can't stand it, and I don't know how much good it's actually doing. That's my opinion. But when you walk into a place of business and start berating the workers, you yourself are the tyrant. I'm sorry, that's the reality. You yourself are the tyrant. You are angry, you are inhospitable, you are quick-tempered. This is really, really just absolutely obscene behavior from someone who calls themselves a pastor. This should not be cheered on by Christians. This man has millions of followers, and Christians all over are falling for this and are then treating people poorly. I mean, this is just bad behavior. This is not watching your life and your doctrine. This is not what this man, Mr. Locke, from his days leaving his wife and so forth in a mentally unstable situation that she was in, and then now marrying his secretary, looking as though he had to cover it up once he was found to have his car parked outside of her house late at night and so forth, having to announce it to his church. But then you're seeing the quick temper of this man. This is not someone you should be following. This is not somebody who should be giving you guidance, as he is a blind man himself, leading the blind into a ditch. And if this sort of behavior, right, because that's what Paul tells Timothy to watch his life and his doctrine, his life, if this sort of behavior is not something that says, well, I don't think that unqualifies him, well, what about teaming up and thinking that the end times, when it comes to what is going on and all of the wicked things that are happening, to think that we can go lock arms with every other false religion, do you think that that's a good idea to say, yes, of course, we're all going to be fighting against the same thing together? Do you think that would be a good idea if I said, yeah, we should team up with Muslims? Should we go on New Agers shows? And then when we're on those New Agers shows, when he says, hey, we're kind of all fighting on the same team, would you agree to that? No, I don't think you would. But I got a video here. Mr. Lockwood.
I have a broader perspective, or not broader, but perhaps not as a biblical perspective as you do on the Bible. But whatever it is, I do believe, I see non-Christians, I see Jews, I see Hindus, I see Muslims all around the world being oppressed and being tyrannically oppressed of taking the vaccine, or going through these hardships and all this too. Is there opportunity for them to wake up, to fight against, if they're fighting against this new world order agenda, the satanic agenda, they're aware of it from their religious perspective? Is there an order for them to be part of the solution rather than being part of the problem?
Absolutely. I think so. I tell people all the time, look, the parts of the Bible that you really believe are the parts of the Bible that you really behave. And so even if they're Islamic, or if they're Roman Catholic, or if they're Jews, if they really believe the text that's been given to them, okay, I happen to believe Jesus Christ is the one and only way to heaven. He died, was buried, rose again. I believe the gospel, okay? John 14:6, I'm the way, the truth, and the life. But if people really believe the text of what they've been taught, then they're going to push back. And they're going to stand up and be like, look, this is nonsense. Because across the board, denominationally or religiously, however you want to look at it, all of us know that there's a great delusion coming, okay? Everybody knows that there's a reason they're trying to take away our religious rights and our opportunities to gather. So be they Muslim, be they Christian, be they Jew, they need to get a gutful of it and stand up and say, no, we're going to believe what our text says. And not one of those texts tells them to simply be sheepish and obey a tyrannical, buck wild, demon-possessed government. Not a one of them, okay? All of them would know, rise up. Because if you really believe in God, each and every one of those religions, I may have my discrepancies and great disagreements, but the unifying thing around all of them is they all teach some level or some form of faith. And so you either have faith or you have fear, but you do not have both.
All right, let's look at that for a second. And I would hope, for anyone being honest, that when you hear him talk about unifying, when you hear him talking about faith, and guys, think about that. Qualifying that faith as in Islamic, he said it himself, right? Catholic and so forth. Qualifying those faiths as being the one thing we can unify is that we all have faith. We all have our religious texts. Guys, we cannot caveat that Jesus is the only way. We cannot caveat that the agenda, the wickedness that is coming, oh yeah, well, I believe Jesus is the only way, but the Islam and all these other groups and all these other cults and all these other things, we can unify to fight against the wicked agenda coming. Guys, what's the wicked agenda that's coming? What is the wicked thing that is going to come and deceive the whole world? I don't know. Maybe it's the spirit of Antichrist. Maybe it's, you know, what 1 John 2 says, that many Antichrists are already in the world. And what is Antichrist? He who denies the Father and the Son. And you're saying we can have a unifying, like, faith where we believe our text and then fight against tyranny? And you can link arm in arm with someone who denies that Jesus Christ died on the cross? That you could have any sort of unifying behavior because you're on some New Ager show that doesn't have the same beliefs as you, and you caveat the gospel? How do you caveat the gospel? This is all we have. When it comes to us, our trust in Jesus, this is all I have. I can't unify. How can you walk side by side with somebody unless you are in agreement? How can you do that? The Bible says quite clearly in Psalm chapter 1 that there are only two people there. There is the person who meditates on God's word day and night, who's planted like a tree, who's like a tree planted against the water and bears fruit in its season. The other is a scoffer. If you've never met or shared the gospel, and I'm telling you, I love my Muslim neighbors. I have texts and chats and with moms of Muslims and with friends of mine that are Muslim. I love sharing the gospel with them. I love them. Okay. But I recognize that they are deceived, that we can't lock arm in arm against tyranny. Sharia law is tyranny. If you believe in Sharia law, you believe in tyranny. And you look at this and you see this and say that sort of stuff. Say, let me caveat that Jesus is the only way. But with all these other religious texts, we can have so much in common because a great delusion is coming. That great delusion that is coming is one that talks about the great falling away, not the never was. It's about those in the church who are taken away by deceitful spirits that go on to another Jesus that Jesus says is not me, that he gave the warnings in Matthew 24 when we talk about this great deception, when we talk about the Antichrist. Guess what? Over and over again, that great deception is caveated with different spirits. That great deception is caveated with what? Another Jesus. That's what Jesus is warning about. Not make sure you team up with those who denied I died on the cross. Make sure you team up with someone who separates the Father and the Son. This is wicked. And guess what? Greg Laught is not only teaching that on New Age shows, but now his teaming up with. Because Greg Laught is doing an event on August 28th with none other than Bethel's own Sean Foyt. Sean Foyt is one going all over the country, and sadly enough, it's another situation where people I know who love the Lord that are sharing it because he's fighting against tyranny. But guys, who are we linking arms with? We are talking about Sean Foyt from Bethel Church. I mean, in Redding, California. And now he's going out and doing those things and teaming up with all these people, and people are giving him, he's totally fine, he's great. Guys, this man is another false teacher pushing the NAR, going alongside with people that are involved in the Seven Mountain Mandate and so forth, with none other than guys like, guess what? We have Sean Foyt from Bethel Church. Bethel Church, Bill Johnson. Bill Johnson writes a book alongside Lance Wallnau. And so when we talk about end times deceptions, let's talk about Invading Babylon, the book written by Bill Johnson and Lance Wallnau. And let's look at what Lance Wallnau believes concerning, and you're going to hear, guys, in this clip of Lance Wallnau, who brings forth the end, which is going to be really interesting when we talk about God's sovereignty and so forth. But not only that, but you're going to hear him talk about the Seven Mountain Mandate, which Invading Babylon, that's exactly what it is. It's about the Seven Mountain Mandate. This is where Sean Foyt comes out of. This is the stuff he is pushing. This is why when he shares pictures of what's going on in Southern California, not too far from us, and then Jack Hibbs shares the same thing, you go, Well, that's really weird. Then Jack Hibb takes that down, but the pictures are still up, and we'll have to pull those up for you guys so you guys can see. They're the exact same pictures. They both were involved in the same stuff. Then you have Shayon over there teaching alongside or telling talk about Jack Hibbs with his friend Jack Hibbs at his event and all the stuff that's going on. You're like, what is happening? Because these people are wicked and there is a deception, and it's not one where we lock arms and link up as Greg Locke is with Sean Foyt, as Sean Foyt is with Bill Johnson, as Bill Johnson and Lance Wallnau push the Seven Mountain Mandate. You're going to hear it from his own lips. Who really controls Jesus's return? Just wait till you hear this. And also, you're going to hear him once again push the Seven Mountain Mandate.
And so, but the one who endures to the end will be saved, and this gospel of the kingdom will be preached in the entire world, the whole world. It's a testimony to the nations. And then the end comes. The end doesn't come when Islam rises. The end doesn't come when China rises. The end doesn't come when the Antichrist rises. The end comes when the church rises and the gospel of the kingdom is preached. It's the church that determines when the end comes, not the devil. And grant to us, Lord, strength to be able to carve our way into the places where the gates of hell are located. I pray for a breaking down of gates of media, breaking down of gates of government, till there's a baptism of truth in the minds of Americans, and this veil is torn. I pray for a net formed by apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, teachers, in every mountain, in media, in academia.
If you're not listening there and not accustomed to some of the stuff there, I do want to encourage you guys to check out our most recent video we did on Bethel and their Rediscovered series. And we'll put a link in the description here because we do go over the Seven Mountain Mandate there. And we plan on going over it even more because I think it's getting more and more concerning because more and more people that, you know, I would have considered very conservative teachers are getting wrapped up in it. But what you're seeing is the logical conclusion of that post-mill thought that he has there, Mr. Wallnau, because he's quoting Matthew 24:14. I want to read what happens before that. Then they will deliver you to tribulation and will kill you, and you will be hated by all nations because of my name. At that time, many will fall away and will betray one another and hate one another. Many false prophets will arise and will mislead many. Because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. The gospel of the kingdom shall be preached into the whole world as a testimony to all nations, and then the end will come. This is not this weird thing that he makes this out to be, that there's this victorious, we take control of the mountains and then preach the gospel, and then we bring about the second coming of Christ. That's not at all what is happening here. We are slaughtered. In the book of Revelation, chapter 13, it says, some will be killed by the sword and some will be led into captivity. And he who endures to the end will be saved is in context of all of that. Enduring till the end. Guys, this is so important for us to understand because so many people have this false idea. And it is so interesting to me because after World War II, it seemed like post-millennialism was kind of going away because, I guess the kingdom of heaven's not being built on earth right here yet, and then Jesus will come. But that there is a literal pre-millennial coming, something that the early church clearly held on to, all right, that I don't know, Revelation 20 is actually literal and it mentions 1,000 years over and over and over again for a reason. But nonetheless, the fact is that we have an abomination that causes desolation coming up immediately after tribulation of those days in Matthew 24:29-31 and so forth. We have false Christ right before that. All of these events that are going to take place, all of these wicked things that are going to happen, and none of them are the entire world turns to Christ and then Jesus comes back. That's not going to happen. What the context is over and over again is death and destruction. In fact, when they are saying peace, peace, sudden destruction comes about them. This man, Lance Wallnau, is deceived. The Seven Mountain Mandate is not part and parcel with the gospel. It's anti-gospel, really. It sounds really good on the surface. And, you know, Proverbs chapter 18 is really clear that the first to plead his case seems right until someone comes over and examines him. So on the surface, it might sound good. Yeah, it'd be great to take over entertainment. Be great to take over the political realm. Be great to take over education. But the fact is that's not what the Bible describes. And it's not what the Bible prescribes for the gospel. For the gospel is not us conquering these mountains and controlling the government and so forth. The gospel is that we preach the gospel and people become saved. They become saved. They don't become the governor. They don't become the president. They don't get to rule and reign and then finally bring on the second coming of Christ when everyone is converted. But actually what takes place is that people come to Christ, and we get to see that. And even if they die, even if someone dies, when they die in the faith, to be absent with the body is to be present with the Lord. We get to reign in victory because ultimately we look forward to the time when our Messiah comes. And I think about 2 Thessalonians chapter 1 and chapter 2 in this context, because we have people being slaughtered, 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, and they're asking, when will our relief come? When will our relief come? Does Paul tell them your relief will come once the entire church controls the seven mountains and are able to then mandate everything we need so that all tyranny and everything could be thrown out and we can now reconstruct the government into a Christian nation all over the entire world with one ruler and then Christ will come back? Or does he say your relief will come when Jesus Christ comes to deal out retribution? That's when our ultimate relief comes. The fact is that I have no promise on this earth other than the fact that Jesus is coming back. And I keep my helmet of salvation on, recognizing and looking forward to his return. So I will not be ashamed by it, thinking I own the seven mountains, thinking I run the show here. And now I'm doing this for the kingdom when you're not. Recognize the deception here that is going on. Recognize the key players and figures and so forth who actually have believed this. Guys like Ted Cruz and his father who have pushed this. Over and over again, these guys have put themselves in government and believed these things. Sean Foyt, nonetheless, running also for office here, or I'm sorry, up in Redding, California. And this stuff is not accidents. These are not accidents. These are legitimate people that are actually deceived and deceiving others. And guys like Greg Locke are pushing right alongside of it, pushing guys like Sean Foyt. Guys like Sean Foyt help those guys like Lance Wallnau and Bill Johnson and so forth. And they push these understandings of the gospel that are antithetical to the true saving grace of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And I believe this is the kind of doctrine that will be ashamed at his coming and will tell us to team up with the very things that the Bible describes as antichrist. Guys, keep your lamps lit. Look to Jesus. Trust what his word says and know that he is the one who tells the end from the beginning. He is the one who dictates, right, his second coming. In fact, it's so funny. You hear him saying those words, right, that we're the ones who decides when Jesus comes back. The church, we're the ones who decide. But I seem to remember 2 Peter chapter 3, that the Lord is not slow concerning his coming, his second coming. He's not slow to it. He's patient, not willing that anyone would perish, but that all would come to repentance. I pray that would be true for you. I pray that would be true for your neighbor, and that we would go out and preach the gospel to every nation, kindred, and tongue. God bless you guys.
The 5:11 News with Chad Davidson has been brought to you by Good Fight Ministries, bringing you news and commentary from a Christian perspective. This show can be heard every Friday wherever podcast shows are available, or visit 511news.org. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to being with you next week on the 5:11 News.